Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa Week continues today. All week long, we're exploring the question, is this home, in different ways. Today, of course, people come to Iowa from all over the world for many different reasons. Building a new life and a new culture can be incredibly challenging. And then you add kids into the mix, children that are of your adopted homeland. They share your genes, but they're growing up in a culture that can be very different from the one you grew up in. This hour, I'll talk with Iowans who have come here from around the world and are raising first-generation Iowans. If this is part of your experience, maybe you are a parent who moved here from another country, or maybe you're a first-generation Iowan yourself, we would love to hear from you this hour. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have four parents with us this hour, and we're going to introduce each one and get a little bit of everybody's story. We'll start with Jeanette Colton, who is an Ames School Board member. She's originally from Chile and has a 12-year-old son. Jeanette, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Charity. Thank you so much for having me.
Jeanette, how long have you lived in the United States?
I've been in the U.S. for 19 years.
Well, Nine?
Yeah, 19. Yeah.
All right.
Give and take.
What brought you to the United States?
Love. My husband is from Iowa. It's a long story, but the biggest chunk of me being here, it's because I followed a man. So, yes,
all right. And you have quite the multicultural household because you are originally from Chile and your husband is Native American, right?
Yes, he has ancestry, Native American, then his whole family identify with the most. He's got several others, but that's the one that they identify the most with, yes.
All right, and your son is 12 years old. What grade is he in?
He is seventh grade.
Seventh grade. Oh, that's a big, challenging year. Jeanette, thank you so much for being here. Our next parent is Ibrahim Kalaila. He is an adjunct instructor at Drake University and president and founder of Middle East Learning and Cultural Center in Ames. He is originally from Jordan and a father of three children, two boys, 11 and 10, and a four-year-old girl. Ibrahim, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Ibrahim, how long have you lived in Iowa?
I have lived in Iowa in two separate times. One of them, in fact, the recent one, I have been living here for 6 years, and previously in 1999 for 3 years until 2002.
What brought you to the United States?
School first, and that was about 20 years ago.
And then second?
And yes, I mean, once we got to the United States and, you know, you start going to school and, you know, finding trying to find different jobs, which is kind of a challenge first. Then you find work and you like the country, you like the community. And then you have the tendency to would like to stay in this country.
Well, we're glad you're here, Ibrahim. Our next parent is Pragnya Yogesh from India. She is a cultural ambassador and director of the, and Pragnya, forgive me if I say this wrong, the Ishanjali Dance Academy?
Yeah, Ishanjali.
Ishanjali Dance Academy. Thank you. She has two boys, ages 10 and 7. Pragnya, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being here.
Now, how long have you lived in Iowa?
It's been about 14 years now.
And what brought you to the United States?
Initially, I came here for my husband's job. And then we initially actually just came to visit or, you know, for a short time. But looks like Iowa became our home now.
Let's also introduce our fourth parent now. Deco Sagar is from Somalia. He is executive director of the International Council for Refugees and Immigrants. He's also the author of a memoir called Life in Exile, The Untold Story of Civil War and Refugee Life. And he is the father of six children, three boys, and three girls, ranging in age from 2 to 11. Deco, hello.
Hey, Charity, how are you?
Very good. Thank you for coming back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
And we've talked about your story on our program in the past, but for people who aren't familiar, tell me just a little bit about your story. You ended up living in a refugee camp for many years before you made your way to Iowa, right?
Yes. I live in Kenya refugee camp between 1992 as a kid to 2007 before coming as a refugee to Des Moines, Iowa in September of 2007.
All right. So you've been in Iowa for about 12 years. You lived in a refugee camp for 16 years. And so all of your children are Iowans. They've all been born here, right?
My firstborn actually was born in the refugee camp, but she came here when she was 1 year and a half. So basically, she just missed being born here. That's, you know, all her life she has grown up here. And so she's an Iowan, of course, yes.
Absolutely. A child of Iowa. Well, I want to hear all of your takes on some of the different things about life in Iowa. And if you want to jump in and share a thought when somebody else is also sharing their story, let's have this be a very open conversation. But Jamet, I guess we'll start with you. I want to talk about community in Iowa and compare what it was like in Chile when you were growing up, the kind of community that you were surrounded by, and the kind of community that you're surrounded by in Iowa as a parent. Can you do a little bit of a comparison contrast for me?
Sure. I've been thinking a lot about it since I learned I was going to be in the show. And, you know, it is really not that different. There are differences here and there. I think as a child, I got yelled a lot by everyone, my mom, the neighbors. It was funny. Friends never yell at my son. So that's a big, big difference.
So the community felt like they could parent you. And
oh,
maybe
my gosh.
That doesn't work in Iowa.
We had a million mothers, and it was very funny. And we listened to no one as a reason. it's not different. It's not so different in the sense that we all want the best for all of our children, right? So in that sense, my friends are not yelling at my son, but they are looking out for him. So if he's running across country, they will be yelling at him so he gets there first, right? So it's not that different. We all want the best, and we all want to protect all of our children because we know that they are the most precious thing we have.
Deco, I want to go to you next. Of course, you spent 16 years living in a refugee camp, which a lot of people may not think is a wonderful place to form a community, but you were surrounded by relatives and people who would help with your care or your siblings. So do some comparing and contrasting for me about what it's like to raise children in Iowa.
So I think... like the other guy said, I think for me, this is a huge difference. And the difference comes from the perspective of how communities in general raise younger people. So for me, I didn't have a lot of time in Somalia, but growing up in southern Somalia, I grew up in a farm and, you know, diving deep into crocodile infested river and chasing monkeys from the farm. You know, it was very much free life, I guess. And then growing up in the refugee camp is also, it was a very unbearable situation, of course, but you are very much surrounded by relatives, this general expectation that if you're misbehaving, you know, someone else from the village or from the community will be able to step in and, you know, make sure it's an expected responsibility, whether they are related to you or not. And then coming to America, you know, I came with that mindset, and I will share with you an experience that was quite embarrassing, but also tells you the level of culture shock, I guess. So back in 2008, I had a job as a part-time youth specialist with Iowa Homeless Youth. And I don't know if it is actually a very interesting case, but it kind of shows the, you know, where I was coming from, which in that case, for me, I was doing the right thing. So there was an underage child who lived at the shelter, and their partner actually came to visit. She was a young lady who had a boyfriend. And being raised in a very conservative Muslim majority community, you know, there are some behaviors that are actually considered inappropriate. And one of them, to me, was, you know, openly expressing your affection to your partner in public, especially if you are not married. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I first saw them kissing each other, that was no-no, and I tried to intervene, not knowing that actually I was violating their right to express their love.
Right, so public displays of affection were not something that would have been okay back in the refugee camp, right?
Yeah, so for me, I was doing the right thing, making sure that this kid is don't misbehave. And here you have a culture that actually embraces that, and it's okay for them to exercise that.
Right. So, well, so that's a little bit of culture shock. But also, given how surrounded you were by people when you were growing up, did you feel and do you feel really isolated here in Iowa? Because we do tend to stick to our family units.
It's very, for me, it was very isolating when I came. I came here at the age of 22, 23, and I had no support system when I came. I live in an apartment with no internet, no TV, no relatives, no support system. So it was quite as isolating and depressing, I would say. And I came late fall, so immediately, you know, that was my first winter. Can imagine when you don't have a lot of things going on.
Yeah, I hear a lot of agreement. Everybody comes from someplace warmer.
So I got stuck into my apartment, and I was so lonely in the midst of hundreds of thousands of people. Obviously, that gradually improved, but there were days that actually I thought if I had the means to go back to the refugee camp, I would have gone back immediately.
Wow. Well, we are going to take a short break. Ibrahim, you get to go next when we get back from the break. We're talking this hour about what it's like to raise first-generation Iowans. So I have with me this hour four parents who've come to Iowa from different places in the world. We're talking about what it's like to raise kids here in a culture very different from the one that they came from. If that's part of your story, or maybe you are a first-generation Iowan, you're welcome to join us. 866-780-9100. With me this hour, Deco Sagar from Somalia. He's executive director of the International Council for Refugees and Immigrants and father of six. Pragnya Yogesh from India. She has two boys, ages 10 and 7. Ibrahim Kalila from Jordan has three children, and Jamet Colton has one 12-year-old son. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Week, and all week long we're exploring the question, is this home? This hour, I'm talking with people who've come here from all over the world and are raising children in Iowa, raising first-generation Iowans. With me this hour, Deco Sagar from Somalia. He is executive director of the International Council for Refugees and Immigrants and the father of six children. Pragnya Yogesh from India. She's a cultural ambassador and director of the Ishanjali Dance Academy. She has two boys. Jamet Colton is an AIMS school board member. She's originally from Chile and has a 12-year-old son. And Ibrahim Kalila is an adjunct instructor at Drake University and president and founder of Middle East Learning and Cultural Center in Ames. He's originally from Jordan and the father of three children. And Ibrahim, when Deco was talking about how harsh that first winter was, I heard you laughing in recognition.
Yes, yes, definitely. Winter, you know, when we moved to the States, winter comes as a surprise. Like, we know what winter is back home. And it is funny when, in wintertime, when you ask somebody, does it rain or is it going to rain tomorrow? Then they tell you, no, it's not going to rain, it's going to snow. And that means, you know, the difference in climate between where we come from, for example, in the Middle East or Jordan, we are used to have rain in winter. In summer, there's no rain. So it is dry climate in summertime, and in winter, that's where we get the rain, and eventually we get summer, we get snow, and that's where we go out and play with it, and everybody's happy to see that, you know, white stuff on the mountains.
And in here, maybe you're not quite as happy to see it.
We know it to be. I mean, it was very exciting at the beginning, but you know, when it stays for 9 months out of the year, that is a little too much.
9 months. Yes.
Yeah, that's how it feels. You know, like from September through May, almost.
So Ibrahim, I asked both Deco and Jamet about it, but do a little compare and contrast about the kind of community you're raising your kids in today compared to what you grew up with.
Yes, I mean, comparing the community, well, first of all, let me say that I do, just like everybody else here, consider Iowa home. And it has been since we moved in here. And it was a choice to be here, and we're happy to be here. The comparison comes actually in two different levels. The first level is if you are alone or single, which is not our topic today, these challenges or the things that you notice differently are not the same set of changes or differences that you see as a parent or with children. With children, you start with, you know, seeing the care that you need to, you know, that your children can have in this country or in this state, which is, you know, like including medical care and education. It is definitely a lot better where we come from, and that is something, you know, we definitely like. As far as culture related, you know, you come from different religion, from different countries. Some of us come from different religions, and you want to have your children staying in touch with their culture and their religion, without, you know, without losing the new culture that they are moving in or they were, right, you know, born. And at this state, you would like to find a balance or the fine line between what do you do. The language is definitely a challenge in how to raise your children and have them being, you know, bilingual, where they can speak your their heritage language and the English language at the same time.
Right. So do your children speak
Arabic?
Arabic?
Yes. Yes. Actually, three of my children, all of them speak Arabic and understand it. And we have been doing this with them since they were born. We speak Arabic at home. For a simple reason, we have no concern if our children will speak well or not speak English. That is not an issue, and it hasn't been an issue.
Right, being immersed in school and the, yes, community, they will speak English.
Yes, and so it is their only source, and that is one of the challenges we face. Their only source for learning their mother tongue language, mm-hmm, is their family. Sometimes, I mean, that's actually the reason why we founded the Middle East Learning and Cultural Center in Ames, to offer the opportunity for children to stay in touch with the culture and the language they came from.
And I have observed that there are actually many of those communities that have sprung up to try to teach children a language and maintain some of the culture if people can connect with some other people from the country that they came from, which can be hard in some cases. It sounds like in Ames you've built quite a supportive community around.
Yes. I mean, in Ames, in fact, we have a really good-sized community just because, because it is a college town and it is very diverse. So there are so many different people from different countries. They are not necessarily all of them from the same background, like culturally. There are different cultures as well, but those who are the same culture, they can share that in events, in religious events, or in cultural events that we sometimes create in cooperation with the Ames Public Library, for example.
Yeah.
We are very active with Ames Public Library, and they are doing a great job in promoting the cultural side of town in there, and having almost daily, if not weekly, activities to support that idea.
Pranya, I want to give you a chance to share a little bit of your experience comparing how you grew up in India to your children growing up in Des Moines.
Right. Like, back in India, we grew in a place where your house, you know, you grew up with your uncle, your aunt, your grandparents around you. So community also was very important while you're growing. And, you know, it was a place when I grew up, it was, you know, when the kids are growing, we didn't have the liberty to question our elders. And we had to just, you know, follow what they say. And then we didn't have, you know, of course, the things are changing now. So we had to just follow what, okay, this is good for you. And, you know, when your parents say, okay, they decide what is good for you. And then we kind of blindly used to follow that. But things are changing. And, you know, the kids are now given the liberty to think what they want to do. Like, they had a stereotype, like, you know, when you are a girl child, you have to come back from home, like, you know, before it is dark in the night and things like that. So it was kind of conserved. But then now things are changing because also... the community played a very big role there because I believe that, you know, it helps the children to grow emotionally, intellectually, and also physically, which actually gives them a sense of belonging. And it's very, very, very crucial in building their identity. So that one thing I learned is that even though, you know, I was brought up in a place where, you know, our parents guided us, we kind of learned... And we're, you know, we learn a lot about our culture and how we can identify ourselves related to our culture. And being here in Iowa, I'm feeling very nice that Iowa has, you know, it's been very open to many cultures and welcome many people and allow them to be themselves. And it's very nice that I work for an organization called Cultural, wherein I exchange the cultures to schools and colleges. And that's very nice that, you know, what the exchange of culture is important when people, when kids are trying to grow up in a place where you have, you know, where you kind of see different communities. So,
yeah. So I have to ask you, growing up in a place and a time, as you mentioned, things are changing in India as well, where you were not... encouraged to question your elders. Now your kids are growing up in Iowa, and in our culture, kids feel very free to question their elders.
So they have the freedom of asking.
Has that been hard for you?
Well, actually, to say I was not, you know, taught by asking too many questions. But yes, we did respect our elders. So it's not that our parents stopped from us asking them, but then we ourselves, you know, felt, you know, we have to respect our elders. That's how we were, you know, kind of brought up, you know, respecting the elders and following the rules and regulations that we have been following.
But your kids are very good at asking questions, right? Tell me about the kinds of things that they'll ask you about.
The very first thing, you know, my first son, who is 10 now, he was 2 years old. He kept asking me, "Mom, why do we wear different type of clothing, and why do we have to speak different language?" So that was one thing it struck me, because clothing is something secondary that I always felt that, you know, it doesn't matter what you wear when you go outside, but it does matter for the kids that are growing outside. So you know, it just it gave me a minute to think what, you know, why do we think we have different types of, you know, clothing and things like that, you know, even though it's made up of the same, you know, that's what he asked me.
Yeah,
it's everything.
Like speaking a different language. Why do we speak differently?
Yeah. I think that's a good point that you make, like with the elders. I grew up in a culture that you say hello and you hug everybody and you're very affectionate and, and you kiss on the cheek. And I remember I never wanted to do it. I never did, but I was made to. So I'm like, what happened with consent? And now my son get to not have that. He doesn't want it, and no one asks that of him. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it's nice to know that, you know, we have different cultures, but we have something in common as well. So
This hour, we're talking about what it's like to raise first-generation Iowans. Jeanette Colton is here with me. She is originally from Chile. Ibrahim Kalila is from Jordan. Pragnia Yogesh is from India. And Deco Sagar is from Somalia. You are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Capote is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hello. Capote, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Charity. How are you?
I'm good. So, first of all, I know that you are an immigrant. Tell me where you came from.
Hey, well, let's say I grew up in Cote d'Ivoire, but I'm originally from Togo.
Okay.
I came here. Yeah, I grew up with my grandmother in Togo, I think until age 7, and then I went and joined my father in Cote d'Ivoire. He had a business there, so yeah.
And how long have you been in the United States?
I've been here for 11 years, going 11 years.
All right. And you came here as a student?
I came here as an internal student. I had applied for a school in Illinois. My uncle was helping me come here. I was a university student in Lomé because there was a war in Cote d'Ivoire. Then we moved back to Togo. And so I came here, but I ended up at Kirkwood because I'm understanding that it was cheaper. So I did a few years at Kirkwood and then transferred to the University of Iowa.
Nice. Yeah. All right. So you, I'm sure, coming from Cote d'Ivoire, I'm sure that the winter was a pretty big shock as well as it was for many of our guests today.
It was. But this is my story, right? So basically, I didn't have to get into the culture like everybody else did. I basically had to, like, put myself a step ahead because my uncle wanted me. First of all, he didn't want to spend too much money, so I didn't have the luxury to come here and learn ESL. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So I basically had to take English classes and take my TOEFL before I came here. So I knew about the concept. I knew about the rhetoric and the language, mm-hmm. And the, you know, the linguistic aspect of things. And the sarcasm, especially the sarcasm. So yeah.
So, and you have 2 children. That you are parenting on your own. So tell me a little bit about what that's like.
Can you tell to my breath?
Yeah, hard.
It's exciting. It's exciting to be doing this. Not because I'm doing it by myself, but because you basically I starting something new. I didn't have this opportunity with anybody growing up. My family is very, dysfunctional in certain ways. And I grew up with my grandmother till I was 7. And I can tell you to this day that everything that I am is based on what my grandmother taught me. And that's kind of crazy because I'm 35 years of age. And it's amazing to be able to just do everything from, the ground up. Like, we have like a blank slate and we're all learning together. Yeah. So this is new to us. They are multicultural. Their mother is from Russia, but she's not in the picture. They see her, but she's not in the picture. So it's hard to try to put on them what you are, while you at the same time trying to figure out, you know, what you want to become and what it means to you to be here.
Sure. It sounds like you're very aware of the opportunities that they have available to him there or them here that maybe you didn't have when you were growing up in Cote d'Ivoire.
That is true. To be truthful with you, we did have the basic needs growing up with my father. But you always wish that, you know, you were connected with your parents. And being aware of that and all the abuse and stuff like that, I'm trying to just come from a perspective where I am functioning at themselves. I want to see myself in them, and I want them to see themselves in me. And yeah, I'm aware of everything. And they're basically a pushing force for what I'm doing right now. So,
yeah, they give you purpose. Oh, Capote, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. And before we get to the break, I'd like to ask each of you, Ibrahim, you already shared that your children speak Arabic. So yes. Just very briefly, Jamet, does your son speak Spanish?
Nope.
No, he does not. Was that a choice of his or why not?
He understands most of it. But he has not made the transition. And I guess in that household, we always spoke English. My husband speaks English, does not speak Spanish. So it's a little tricky. And I actually never really had a community of Spanish speaking. And I've come to terms with, I think Hispanics were kind of hard on each other when our children don't.
So you feel a little judged sometimes?
Oh gosh, yes, for sure. But I'm okay with it. He's dyslexic, and I think a lot of children that have dyslexia, they have a really hard time learning a second language.
Sure.
And I've come to terms with it. If he does at some point, he will. If he doesn't, it's okay. he has plenty other qualities.
All right. Deco, how about your children and language?
Yeah, my children sadly don't speak Somali. My oldest actually can comprehend some of it, but she cannot articulate any of that in her own words. And it's sad because both my parents don't speak any other language except Somali, and they want to actually chat with my kids. But I think the reality for us is that when we came over here, we had to, tackle things up and make ends meet, and that requires us to bring kids in daycare. Yeah. So you take kids to the English, they come home, they watch TV, it is English. As much as we have tried to actually communicate to them in Somali, it's very much swimming against the waves. And, you will kind of realize when the first one is fluent in English, then the others will follow suit.
Right. All right. We have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about raising first-generation Iowans this hour. With me, Deco Sagar from Somalia, Pragnya Yogesh from India, Ibrahim Kalila from Jordan, and Jamet Colton, originally from Chile. You're welcome to join our conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, Iowa Week continues with the exploration of the question, is this home? And this hour, I'm talking with parents who have come to Iowa from other countries who are raising children here in Iowa, raising first-generation Iowans. With me, Jamet Colton, an Ames School Board member who's originally from Chile and has a 12-year-old son. Ibrahim Kalila is an adjunct instructor at Drake University and president and founder of the Middle East Learning and Cultural Center in Ames, originally from Jordan and the father of three children, two boys and a four-year-old girl. The boys are 11 and 10. Deco Sagar is from Somalia. He is executive director of the International Council for Refugees and Immigrants and father of six children, three boys and three girls, ranging in age from 2 to 11. And Pragnya Yogesh is from India. She's a cultural ambassador and director of the Ishanjali Dance Academy. She has two boys, 10 and 7. And Pragnya, you didn't get an opportunity to talk about keeping your children connected to culture. Tell me how you try or don't try to do that with your boys.
Well, I'm fortunate that both my kids speak the language that we speak, which is called Kannada. It's a South Indian language where I come from. And they also have, they're also learning Indian vocal and instruments. And that way, I think I can see our culture live in our kids.
Wow. And do they enjoy that, or is that something that you kind of have to push?
No, it's like they enjoy doing that a lot. In fact, it was my kids who really wanted to learn that. We keep hearing to music and instrumental music at home, they started to generate interest over it, and they kind of also see a lot of, we have a lot here in Iowa, we see a lot of community places where you kind of have Indian music and instruments. So they develop interest in that, and they are now learning. And they also, my older son also goes around Iowa and Chicago and to perform take part in different, vocal and instrumental recitals.
Do you get to travel to India very often?
Yes, we try to keep, doing the trips at least once a year. So since that, I basically feel that when kids are little, it always has a good impact when they visit their grandparents and, have a good stay with the family, extended family back home there. So it also helps them to be, be more strong with their
And if you have the means to do that, that is fantastic.
Yes,
it's not an easy thing, right?
Even though it's like about 2 days of travel from Iowa,
right?
We make
so
it
even
every
if you
year.
Have the means, it's not easy. Jamet, I think you've been back to Chile once with your son.
Yes.
Yeah. So what was that like?
Oh my goodness, he loved it. I joke because he would never leave Ames. He loves Ames. He loves his friends. He loves it. He loves everything about Ames. And so I joke about, if we win the lottery, we can move to a different country. He's like, I have to stay in Ames. But then when we went to Chile, he goes, I can live here. He loved it. There was just something about it. He loved the mountains, the ocean. He loved the people, the dogs on the street. I mean, he just loved it. He loved the stores at every corner. It was just something that it felt, it was so odd because he was born here, but it felt like this pull that he had to this country that I constantly talk about, but he just knew.
Interesting.
Right?
It was so, it was just within him.
Oh, that's my goodness. Fascinating. He was beautiful.
Ibrahim, do you have an opportunity? Have you had an opportunity to take your children to Jordan?
I have, actually. And that was one of the important things that I have to take up on myself to keep them connected and go in person there to experience the extended family concept.
Right.
And that is something, you know, when we first came, you know, we missed as far as, you know, when my son came back to Ames and he was telling his friends, I have 50 cousins. And everybody, like, their jaw dropped. Like, what?
Right.
And that is, he wasn't exaggerating. It is kind of feasible to have 50 cousins there. You know, the family size there is kind of bigger. And they are more connected with each other. And that is the other thing, you know, the family bond that we kind of miss sometimes, and taking care of elderlies. In general, people, you know, there, the elderlies, the younger generation takes care of the older generation. Mm-hmm. Most likely, they do not send them to nursing homes. And you know, cousins, they play with each other whenever they have the chance, and they play everywhere, including the street. And that is kind of a concept not acceptable in Ames or in Iowa or in the States in general. But people feel more, you know, like, safer to do that or more accustomed to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, Deco, I suspect, given that you are a refugee and lived in a refugee camp for so long, that travel back is probably impossible. That hasn't been something you've been able to do, have you?
You know, personally, I've been in Somalia for the first time since 1991, in a year ago. So that was a huge opportunity for me to go back because I left the country when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. My kids have not had that opportunity. I don't think it's still safe for my family to visit. So that is an unfortunate thing for them. So in terms of the exposing them to a culture and the language and the people they, you know, have roots in will have been an ideal. But at this time, it's not an ideal for us to, as a family, and especially for my kids, go back. Surprisingly, though, you know, my kids are very aware about their roots, about their families and extended relatives overseas. And they have this strange picture about Africa in general. So, you know, they believe what most Americans or Westerners believe about Africa, which is a jungle full of wild animals. And when I was in Mogadishu, my son actually called me. He actually FaceTimed me, and I was in a hotel sleeping. And he was like, let me see your room. And so I projected the camera to the whole room, and he had seen TV. And, you know, it was a beautiful hotel. And then when I came back, he was quite shocked that I was not actually in the middle of the jungle, just living under a shade of tree.
Oh,
so to kind of explain to him...
never expected that, did you?
Yeah, I never expected that. It was quite an interesting conversation.
I'm sure it was.
So he was like, I want to go to Africa next time you're going to Somalia. And I told him, well, then maybe we can spend some time in the jungle. And he said, no, last time you were in a beautiful place, so we don't have to go to the jungle.
I want to go to a nice hotel, Dad. All right, we are going to run out of time, but I want to talk about faith. And Ibrahim and Deco, you're both Muslim, and you're raising Muslim children in Iowa. Has that been a challenge for you, Ibrahim?
Not quite. In fact, in Iowa, you know, we're happy to, you know, to be able to, you know, being a Muslim is not really an issue in Iowa. And we are able to raise our children the same way we would like them to be raised. And that, you know, having a temple or a mosque up in Ames and pretty much in every town, with the community, that definitely helped.
All right. How about you, Deco? Has that been challenging?
Not necessarily like challenging, but I think to be honest, I am a father of three beautiful girls. Two of them are very young, actually. They are the last born of their family. But my firstborn is the 11-year-old is a girl, mm-hmm. and she wears hijab. And right now is a very polarized time. She and I actually go for a jog quite often on Grace Lake. And I remember when, during the last general election, she was a little bit uncomfortable wearing hijab. I think she kind of felt maybe different. There was a sense of fear in her voice.
A hijab when you're going around Grays Lake, she was nervous because she was worried that people would say cruel things to her?
Yes, because I think there's a lot of, during the election, I think there's a lot of negativity geared toward these people of Muslim faith, and subsequently a number of countries, including Somalia, has been banned from entering the United States. And of course, kids get access to that information.
Right.
So I think until recently, she never felt that way. But of course, Iowa is our home. Personally, I feel like even though I love Iowa and we live here for over a decade now, you know, there's a hole in my heart. There's something that I'm missing from where I came from. But at the same time, I realize that America does not have an exit. It has only an entrance.
Does your wife also wears a hijab or the headscarf? Has she ever felt in danger because of that? Has she ever felt that people might hurt her or do something?
Actually, she felt that way. And there was a time not too long ago, and I was out of the country when she called me about an incident. Not an incident. I think she was big in Ibiza for the kids in the evening, and we normally go to this specific visa place that has been have been receiving our business for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And so you're regulars at the pizza place, yeah.
Yeah, so they accommodate our Muslim requests, like cutting with clean knives and everything, that, you know, our food is not exposed to bulk products and bake and things like that. So they have been actually accustomed to our needs, and they have been very accommodating. So every time we go there, they have to prepare fresh for us with fresh, clean utensils. And she was waiting in the car with the kids when someone pulled next to her. And, that person has been staring with my wife and my kids. The next time that she actually felt that she needed to leave the order.
Wow, so she felt like she needed to leave the pizza behind.
Minute.
Yeah, Ibrahim?
Yes, I'm sorry, but I can actually relate to that question if I have a minute.
Yeah.
My wife does wear a hijab, which is the scarf around here. A lot of people, you know, they don't know what the hijab is, which is, you know, the scarf Muslim women normally wears. The issue, a lot of people, they understand that this is a culture and a religious thing, and just a fact that not all Muslim women wear that. So that is one thing. The other thing is having the pre-imprinted impression on people that this woman has been, you know, under pressure, or assume that the woman who wears hijab is not educated or has no freedom. This is totally incorrect. For example, my wife is a chemical engineer, and she wears, so her education is one of the highest in her field. The freedom she has is totally unlimited in that part, and the hijab is a choice she made.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, you know, being forced on her. And in fact, one of the funny incidents that we know of a lady who wears hijab, that some American Samaritan, we would call them, walk into her and ask her, hey, this is my phone number. If you need to get away from your, you know, this, let's say, pressure, I can help you. Thinking that she was being, you know, like forced into wearing that.
Right, or controlled against her will. So a lot of preconceived notions. So not necessarily just discrimination, but also well-meaning people assuming negative things.
Yes, well-meaning, that is the best way to put it. I mean, I don't think they meant harm, but they just meant they wanted to help.
Right,
Thinking that was not her choice.
Yeah, she did not need help. All right, we are nearly out of time. And I want to talk just briefly about education. And Deco, I'll let you very briefly go first, because education was something you really had to work to get access to when you were growing up. Your children have access to the public school system in Iowa. How does that feel as their dad?
Well, you know, for me, I feel very privileged that they have unlimited access to basic education, both elementary as well as secondary and tertiary education if they pursue. But it's also a little bit disappointing that to see my kids, how, you know, for me, it's just a precious thing to stick to. But for them, it's just like, you know, something that they take for granted.
Right.
For me, it was something that was denied.
Yes, all Iowa children so, take education for granted, I think. That's...
Yeah, but I have to add into this, you know, if I have a minute after that.
In addition to that, I think I used to work with the Des Moines Public Schools. And, of course, you know, we have a very diverse student body in Des Moines Public Schools, and a lot of our kids do not fall in the same economic category. And then at the same time, when I was with a school, you will hear that this kid cannot succeed because of lack of resources. And I tried to comprehend what that really meant, because I really struggled with it.
Right.
The child, at least even those low-income families, have access to free food in the school, free transportation. In terms of material, they have access to anything they want in terms of books and electronics, even at a school level. You know,
it's very, very different from life in the refugee camp when you didn't have access to those resources. We're almost out of time, but Pragnia, what did you want to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to add in, like, one thing is, like, you know, when it comes to education, back in India, we actually, when I consider the elementary schooling, comparing the education here, I think in India, we actually are loaded with a lot of things when we are studying in elementary school. So that was way too much when we were studying. And we did enjoy it and learn a lot. But I think once my kids actually came to know when they visit India and they saw their cousins and people, you know, going to school and their subjects, and they felt very fortunate that, yes, Mom, I think we are not loaded with too many things but elementary school.
School is a little easier here.
It's much more easier here and then compared to there, because, and also that when it comes to religion and all those faith, I think people, you know, my kids were like, why do we have so many god and goddesses? Why can't we just pray once? So it was like, you know, it's quite challenging. And then, yeah.
Oh, well, I wish that we could all talk for much longer about raising your children in Iowa, but I'm glad you're all here. Thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you so much.
I've been talking to Pragnia Yogesh. She's from India, a cultural ambassador and director of the Inchinjali Dance Academy. She has two boys, ages 10 and 7. Deco Sagar is from Somalia. He's executive director of the International Council for Refugees and Immigrants and father of 6 children, 3 boys and 3 girls, ranging in age from 2 to 11. Ibrahim Kalilo is here. He's an adjunct instructor at Drake University and president and founder of the Middle East Learning and Cultural Center in Ames. He's originally from Jordan and father of 3 children, 2 boys, 11 and 10, and a 4-year-old daughter. And Jeanette Colton was also here, an Ames school board member. She's originally from Chile and has a 12-year-old son. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Iowa Week continues tomorrow. I'm Charity Nebbie.